The questions will continue next week for Trump administration officials. Attorney General Jeff Sessions goes before a Senate committee on Tuesday, and he is expected to answer questions about what part he might have played in Comey's firing.
James Comey left no doubt that he didn't trust Attorney General Jeff Sessions. He told senators that he didn't feel comfortable telling Sessions the president had pressured him to stop the FBI's investigation of fired National Security Advisor Michael Flynn.
Many times during the campaign, I had wanted to achieve a larger majority, but that was not the result that we secured. And I'm sorry for all those candidates and hardworking party workers who weren't successful, but also particularly sorry for those colleagues who were MPs and ministers who'd contributed so much to our country and who lost their seats and didn't deserve to lose their seats.
Parents are spending a few thousand dollars a year for their kids to play American football. It may only be a minor sport in soccer-obsessed China, but it just like in American high schools, games for the league are held on Friday nights, with uniformed referees, post-game interviews, and plenty of support.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Monday. It's June 12th, 2017, 5:10 in the morning. Glad to have you here for another business day. Another business week is underway. Lots to cover this morning. July 1st, a new law goes into effect in Illinois. It'll change child support laws in the state. We'll be talking with an expert on this legal firm with knowledge of all of the changes. You'll want to tune in for that if you are somehow related to this, if you're paying child support or receiving it. New laws July 1st. And in a minute, we'll bring in our CEO for our CEO spotlight this morning. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, Asian shares are mostly lower today following the drop of technology shares last week on Wall Street. On the big board this morning, in Asia, markets generally lower, off the Nikkei off about 104 points, about a half a percent. Other markets are right there with them. The Hang Seng is off about a percent and a half this morning. In Europe, markets are generally lower as well, with the FTSE in London off about a quarter. The DAX, 126 points lower. That's a full percent. And the CAC is off almost a full percent as well. Back in this country, Dow futures are pointing toward a weak open on Wall Street, off 35 points this morning. NASDAQ futures off about 50, almost three-quarters of a percent. S&P is off about 7 this morning. Crude oil is trading at $45.96 a barrel, which is up about a quarter. Some stories we're watching for you this morning. The CEO of Uber faces a tough week. The Uber board is considering replacing, or at least placing, the CEO of the ride-hailing company on leave. The New York Times says people with knowledge of the matter have confirmed that the board is considering recommendations from a law firm hired to review its corporate future. The newspaper says its sources requested anonymity because they haven't been authorized to speak for Uber. Uber has been rocked by accusations that its management under CEO Travis Kalanick have allowed harassment, discrimination, and bullying. Calls to Uber have not been returned. Again, the board has been meeting, a decision expected imminently on that, probably by midweek, if not sooner than that. An analyst says the average price of regular grade gasoline has fallen less than a penny per gallon over the last 3 weeks, $2.40 per gallon this morning. Industry analyst Trilby Lundberg of the Lundberg Survey says that gas prices in the coming weeks may decline unless crude oil prices rebound pretty quickly. Also, Bank of America and Delta Airlines have pulled funding from a Manhattan-based theater company's portrayal of Julius Caesar as a Donald Trump lookalike in a business suit who gets knifed to death. The Charlotte-based North Carolina company tweeted a statement, this is Bank of America, last night, saying it's withdrawing funding for the public theater's production of Julius Caesar. Earlier, Atlanta-based Delta Airlines pulled funding from that theater company. It is called Sustainable Fashion, and in this case, it's Sustainable French Fashion. A new store has opened up in Chicago at the Shops at Northbridge. It's called Le Lune, and the CEO is Anna Lacat. She's with us this morning here on the Opening Bell to talk about this. You'll never guess what the Sustainable Fashion is made from. Okay, we'll tell you. Bamboo. Anna, good morning. Welcome to the opening bell.
Well, good morning. Thank you so much for having me here.
It's good having you here because we're obviously going to talk about your store that's opening soon. But I want to start first because we've been talking a lot about this here on the opening bell lately about where we get stuff, whether it's food, goods that we buy, and in your cases, it's the source material for clothing. Why is this an important aspect of what you do?
Well, I think it's almost everything. It's the most important aspect of what we do. The reason I started this company was because I spent 15 years in China running a supply chain management company for other fashion brands, for top luxury fashion brands, and seeing how fashion gets made. And it was unacceptable to me. I think that it's if we are to spend time making something, it should be good. It should be high quality and last people for many, many years. Not how fast fashion is done, where it's you buy a shirt for very cheap and then it shrinks or it tears in 1 to 2 months and then you have to go and buy a new one. So when we started Lilun, we thought about that and we sourced, actually developed the fabric. It took us 2 years to develop this rayon from bamboo, to make sure that it's ethically made, that it's eco-conscious. Bamboo is great for the for the planet. It's actually great to use bamboo for everything. And that it lasts for a long, long time.
What were some of the other things that, I mean, when you went on this and found these practices, what was the biggest thing that surprised you about all of what you saw? What was the worst thing? What were the other things that sort of raised red flags for you?
The worst thing was that, you know how we say made in China is bad quality? Mm-hmm. This is the stigma about made in China. When I started my company in China when I was 21 years old, I thought, well, let's go and find out why Chinese people make such bad quality products. Well, the answer was, no, they don't want to do that. They would rather spend their time and energy on making excellent, high-quality products. It's the buyers, the big corporations from the United States and Europe, the Walmarts of this world, that are asking them to produce such low-quality products. And they're asking it in a different way. They design products that are low quality, and they also ask for very low prices. When you ask somebody to make a T-shirt for $1, there is absolutely no way for them to produce it at a high quality and at the same time have high enough margin to pay well to their employees, to take care of their working environment, and to then take care of the environment around them, which is our environment as well.
Right.
And so we here, as consumers of all these big companies and corporations, we are kind of part of this. If we are buying a T-shirt that costs $5 to $10 to $15, it was made for $1, which means that we are actually contributing to the situation of badly made products and to factories doing this to our environment.
You refer to it as fast fashion. Who is it that's pushing that? Is it, you said the makers of it? Is it the people that run, let's say, Company B, or is it the in-between people that sort of are the go-betweens between those big companies? I guess the question is, do those big companies know what they're doing?
I think that the people who are pushing it are consumers. We want to go and buy a very cheap T-shirt, and we want to keep going and buy new things. Mm-hmm. You know how in Europe, long time ago, people bought a washing machine and they expected it to work 20 years, 50 years? We don't have that expectation anymore. We are not demanding the brands to have our products last for that long. We're accepting something that breaks right away. Mm-hmm. We're not upset enough or angry enough. And that's what pushes them. This is what works in business. And so business people capture that opportunity and go with it.
So you have made a splash in this area. Are consumers telling you that they want to change that?
Absolutely, yes. Consumers are saying that they're coming in because we are ethically manufactured, because we have our own factory in Shanghai, and that we hire. I personally know every seamstress that works in our Shanghai facility. We know their families. We take care. They are part of us. They are our team. So we treat them the same as ourselves. So consumers coming in because of that. They also want to know that our fabrics are eco-friendly, that we're taking care of the environment, that we're fighting global warming. Mm-hmm. So absolutely, it's starting. It's not as obviously, the fast fashion is still extremely successful business-wise. So we're kind of going against the grain there.
Mm. Is that going to be a movement that catches up in a bigger way? So in addition to your company, are consumers going to be going to other clothing places and saying, hey, we want better?
Absolutely. Millennials, the younger generation is definitely much more authentic. They're much more conscious of what they're buying, how they're spending their money. They would rather not spend money at all than to buy something that where it's not checked, where it's not clear where it's coming from. Younger people now are asking many more whys than older generation, and this is wonderful. So as long as we have a strong why, and as long as other companies have that strong why and how they do things, they're going to be successful.
The win for companies like yours, too, is that the millennials, once they figure that out and like somebody that's doing the right thing, they become loyal customers. Are you seeing that among the millennials as well?
Absolutely. And I have to say that number-wise, we can see it now already with men. So our menswear is actually already like that. Mm-hmm. We love selling to men. Men are so loyal. They come in, they buy one T-shirt, and then they just never go away.
Right.
Keep coming back. And yes, the millennials in general, they're showing that pattern of behavior, that once they checked and it all works with their values, then they stay loyal and they support the brand.
I'm curious, as a CEO, do you follow through on all of this stuff? I mean, you say you know that the seamstresses in China and the people that work in that, but do you go and look at the place where they raise the bamboo, and do you follow it all the way back to the beginning of the chain?
Absolutely, and I love doing it. This is where I came from. You know, originally I'm from Ukraine, but I moved to China very early, and I speak Chinese fluently. Mm-hmm. When you don't see me, you think I'm Chinese when I speak Mandarin. And so I love to go and to discover and to make sure myself that I'm very controlling in general. So I want to know where it's growing and how it's been harvested and then how it's been turned into fabric. So, yes.
So let's talk a little bit about how this is sort of translating. You have opened in San Francisco, Paris, Shanghai, and now coming to Chicago for a store on Michigan Avenue. Talk about the growth. Talk about the success of your company.
So currently we have 4 stores in California. We have one in San Francisco, one in Corte Madera, Walnut Creek, and then Hillsborough also just opened up, which is an amazing location in the wine country. We love being there. It's always good to have good wine and good clothing. So highly recommended. Chicago for us is the first store outside of California. It's actually been pretty challenging for us because we're a very small company. We have an office in Shanghai, an office in Paris. All our design is actually done in Paris. All our fitting, pattern making, all creative is done in Paris. But then here, going outside of California and selling to Chicago market, it's pretty interesting. We're learning a lot about Chicago. We love Chicago. I personally think that Chicago is the future new capital of the United States.
Yeah.
I think that art-wise and politics-wise, it's going to grow and going to become the center. With Obama coming back, you have all these amazing people that are from Chicago. So we definitely want to establish ourselves here and to connect with local art community to and fashion community to be strong here.
That's a wonderful compliment to our city that out of all of the places on the map you could have thrown a dart, you chose Chicago. That's really nice. So tell us about the store that's coming onto Michigan Avenue.
So we are in 520 Michigan Avenue. On the second floor, right outside of Nordstrom's, it's a very large space, beautiful space. We're showing our full collection here. So it means that we have men's, we have women's ready-to-wear, lingerie, athletic wear, and lounge wear. Everything is made out of bamboo. And our aesthetics is a French classic aesthetics. So the idea is that when you travel, which we always travel, we're on the bike or on the subway or on the plane, we want to be elegant and comfortable at the same time. And it's difficult to achieve that because comfortable usually means casual. We're comfortable and very elegant.
What is it about the bamboo that lends itself to that?
So bamboo in general is great. Bamboo initially was chosen by us because bamboo is great for the environment. If we were all using bamboo for many of the things that we use, it would be great to fight global warming. But then the fabric that we developed drapes very nicely. It has this silky sheen that is just elegant by itself.
Mm-hmm. One of the other trends, I mean, first of all, it is great to know that retail is surviving, that you are expanding and not contracting, because we see so many other clothing retailers not making it for whatever reason. What's the secret sauce there? Is it just the things that we've been talking about, or is there something else at play with your company?
There is something else. We spend a lot of time with consumers. Every piece that goes into our collection comes from consumers' demands and asks. So we do not develop somewhere in Paris where it's like, usually with many other fashion brands, it's the designer who comes up with concepts. With us, it's consumers coming in and saying, look, I have this T-shirt. It's my favorite T-shirt. I don't want to part with it. And they explain to us why in their lifestyle this is what's needed, and then we slowly add it in the collection. Our development is very slow in general. We call it slow fashion versus fast fashion, where we add very few styles in the collection every month, but then they all came from the demands of the consumers.
And how do you reach out to the consumers, or what's that communication process like? Do you have meetings with them? Do you have focus groups? How do you get that information?
It's actually much more organic than that. So we are using Slack for all of our employees. So all the stylists in stores, they are on Slack all the time. And we have a channel that is also shared with our design team in Paris. And we're on the ongoing basis, as salespeople talk to consumers and as they find out, asks, demands, suggestions, they put it in this channel, and then it gets evaluated daily. So we have a constant, basically we are communicating with consumers every day as they are in the stores. And this is the main focus of our salespeople, is to connect and to find out what they need and why.
Speaking of your salespeople, one of the other things you're doing differently than other places is your people are all full time. Why did you make the decision to do that?
We want to, all the salespeople for us are like our family. We want to get to know them, and we want to know why they're doing it. We want to train them correctly. Our French team trains them in French styling, how to find the most flattering fits for everybody's for each silhouette, each body. So training takes time. And then us getting to know them takes time. With part-timers, there is no time really for that. They come and go, and then they have their attention spread between several part-time jobs. So we want full attention, and we want time to train, and we want to know that how to make each of these people work their best.
Mm-hmm. And it's costly, too, to do that, isn't it, to continually train people over and over, have that revolving door, as it's called.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Yes, it's costly, so we want to decrease that cost.
This is obviously providing several different lessons for others. What is it that you hope is said about you, not only going forward in the future about your company, but what kind of lessons can other people learn from this, other companies?
I think in general, when we started in fashion, we understood that we want to slow down. We should not always just take the rules of industry as they are. I think it's a good idea to always question them and to slow down, think of your whys and hows before you do anything. And that's what we've done with every step of the process, not only how we develop products, but also how we source fabrics, how we manufacture, how we train employees, and also how our salespeople, how our stylists interact with customers. That's what we found out, is that especially millennials, they want authentic relationships. They don't want to just come in and talk to a robot. They want to be asked, how is your day going and why you are here and how can we make your life better?
Yeah.
And so that's also what we're doing and what we're training our stylists to do.
And speaking of robots in the future, have you thought ahead 5 or 10 years? And those other stores, I foresee robots in those stores. Do you think that'll ever happen with you?
I think that retail for now is going to – I think that humans – are staying humans, and humans will always want human relationships with others. Yeah. And so I am sure that robots will take a lot of the manual work that's done out of our hands, but then the connection, this eye-to-eye connection, is going to stay. Right now, people that do go buy retail, they go because they want that human connection. Otherwise, they can go online and buy without that interaction, right? So I think that as long as retail stays as it is, that third place where people go to get some kind of experience, they will want other humans there so that they can have that experience together with them.
I don't want to take away from the excitement of you opening up a Chicago store, but is the goal to have stores all over the country and all the big cities?
Absolutely. The goal is to have third place that's authentic and warm and where you can buy wonderful, comfortable clothing all over the world. Yes.
Is there a takeaway or a eureka moment that you've had in your career as you've been developing these stores in this line of fashion? Is there a moment where you said, where a light bulb has come on and something has happened?
Definitely happened with me with this fabric that we are using, where we finished development and I had the customer who put a product on made of our rayon of bamboo. And what happened to that person, how happy she became after once she put it on was like, oh, yes, that happiness, I want to see that happiness in many other people.
Yeah. And does that happiness translate into a lifelong customer, do you think?
Absolutely, yes. Raving fan.
Yeah. I think the takeaway, too, after speaking with you this morning, I'm a little angry not at this notion that we've been thinking of the Chinese in such a negative light, and that's not really a reputation that's earned.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's really sad. You're a little angry. I'm very angry.
Yeah.
And I speak about it all the time. It's this is a nation of people who love production. They love making things with their hands that are excellent. And if you see what Chinese people are producing for their domestic market, it's excellent. Domestic brands, when Chinese person goes to buy something, they are willing to spend good money to buy something that will last them a long time and hopefully they will transfer it to their children.
Yeah.
That's how Chinese people shop. When they come to United States and they see made in China, they say, oh, it was made in China for United States. I'm not going to buy it. So, in fact, in China, we have a reverse understanding of United States that these are people who don't care about quality. And so if we make for U.S., we're going to make this kind of, lower quality products because that's what they're willing to pay for their chip.
Yeah.
But for ourselves, we're going to make something nice that's going to last me because they understand that when you have a product and you are interacting with it like with clothing, you know, you're putting it on your skin, on your body. Mm. It's the same as what you're putting on your skin as cosmetics or skincare or what you are eating. Why not care for it? Why not have that relationship with this product?
Well, it's wonderful meeting you, and best of luck to you here in Chicago and around the world.
Thank you so much for your time.
Anna Lacan is the CEO and founder of Le Lune, and it's open in Chicago now. You can find more at lelune.com. That's LESLUNES.com. And you can follow them on Twitter at Le Lune, that's LES_LUNES. And we'll continue our conversation with Anna after the bell. We'll post it with our podcast of the show later this morning at WGNRadio.com.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. It's 5:40. Glad to have you here with us for a Monday edition of The Opening Bell. Some other business news that we're watching for you this morning. Massachusetts' bid to become the nation's leader in offshore wind power is ramping up. The state's electric utility, National Grid, Eversource, and Unitil are slated to release by June 30th their requirements for projects seeking to develop the state's first ocean-based wind farm. It's a big deal because others in other parts of the world and here in the U.S. are watching this ocean-based wind farm project to see how it moves along. Immune therapy is the hottest trend in cancer care, and living drugs are apparently its next frontier. Genetically engineering patients' own immune cells to be stronger and smarter lets them grow inside the body into an army that seeks out and destroys tumors. Two versions of the so-called CAR T cells may hit the market soon to treat some types of leukemia and lymphoma. Now researchers are trying to harness their power to help more patients and more common kinds of cancer. Low-cost grocery store chain Aldi says it plans to add more stores in the U.S. over the next 5 years, meaning more competition for traditional grocers. Walmart and organics food chains like Whole Foods, the German company, focuses on private label goods like Trader Joe's, they do. So no Kraft macaroni and cheese. 1,650 stores in the U.S. so far. Aldi says it aims to give customers organic produce and meat raised without antibiotics. It was already planning on expanding to 2,000 stores by the end of 2018. The company now says that it will be about 2,500 locations by the end of 2022. In comparison, Kroger, one of the other large grocery store chains in the U.S., owns chains like Kroger's, Fry's, Ralph's, Mariano's. They have about 2,800 supermarkets. On July 1st, there's some changes coming to Illinois' child support laws. Big changes, as a matter of fact, you probably need to be aware of. Helen Ashford is the co-founder and managing partner at Luckett and Ashford in Chicago, and she's with us this morning here on The Opening Bell. Helen, good morning. Welcome.
Good morning, Steve. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's good having you here with us. This is a big deal for anybody who's paying or receiving child support, is it not? What are the big headlines here?
Absolutely. So the child support laws will be changing July 1st, and the new approach will be basically an income shares model, which is huge for Illinois because the child support laws have not changed in the last 30 years.
What has been the model, and why did they feel the need to change it?
So the model now is the non-residential parent pays a certain percentage of their income and nothing else is considered. So if you have one child, it's 20% of your net income. It's a really straightforward, basic calculation. The new law came about because many parents felt like they were paying an amount and the other parent was getting a windfall, basically. And many lawyers like myself have been pushing to get changes in the child support laws.
So, in other words, then, there was a fairness issue involved with how much was being paid and how much was being decided here.
Absolutely.
How does this, you mentioned how this is going to work as moving forward. How did it come about happening? Were all sides at the table discussing this?
Absolutely. This has been a conversation that's been happening for many, many years, at least 10 years that I know of. And it's just been pushed and pushed, and it's been a long-awaited change that many practitioners have been waiting for.
Give us a sense from your practice when you have these cases. Is this one of the biggest issues when you are deciding and representing people that this payment plan is one of the big arguments?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Many parents feel when we explain what the law is, they feel like it's not fair. Like this is not happening, and you have to say it is what it is. And so now it's very exciting to be able to tell, you know, our paying parents that we will be able to advocate a more fair situation for them.
The notion here, the way it's described in the law, is something called basic child support obligation. Maybe you could explain that a little bit more to us.
So basically, the law says that both parents have an obligation to support the child financially. But the law doesn't treat the situation that way. And it makes the payer parent only consider their income when deciding child support. And so now it's going to take in consideration both parents' income as if the child would have been living in an intact home.
And so another part of this, too, is the shared parenting aspect of the law, the new law. What will that mean?
That means that the law is going to take into consideration the time that both parents have the children. So if each parent has a child at least 146 overnights per year, it will take that into consideration, and the basic child support will have a calculation that it uses based on the shared parenting time.
Helen, when we hear about stories of child support, and maybe I'm just putting my own lens on this, we often hear that it's not being paid at all. If you could give us a status of how that's where is that a fair way to describe child support? Are their kids not getting the payments that they deserve? And will this law do anything to help that non-payment?
There are absolutely parents who do not pay any child support at all. I don't know that this new law will solve that issue. This new law will be more beneficial to people who are already paying. Those things that are in place for parents who do not pay child support, I would assume will still stay in place to, I don't want to say punish the parents that don't pay, but to enforce and promote payment from those parents who are not paying their child support like they should.
Can you share with us, and again, I don't want any names or anything, no specific stories, but general stories of how parents are impacted by this? I've heard stories of parents who are paying child support who can barely then support themselves because they're paying so much. What are some of the personal stories involved here?
So there are definitely parents who, because there's a straightforward calculation, you pay 20% for one child. There are situations where the law will take into consideration your personal situation at home. Maybe you have, you know, other children. Maybe you have another family at home, a wife, and you have an obligation to those children also. So the law does have things in place that take into consideration your own personal situation.
Okay. Helen, good of you to be with us this morning. This is obviously taking effect July 1st, so it's something people need to read up on if they're not already read up on it.
Yes, it is. And it's definitely something that people who are paying child support or receiving child support should contact a professional who can get them through this and help them understand how this may impact them.
Helen Ashford is the co-founder and managing partner at Luckett & Ashford, a Chicago law firm. Thanks for being with us, Helen.
Thank you, Steve.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning. Dow futures are pointing toward a negative open on Wall Street later this morning, off 26 points. NASDAQ futures off 38. S&P futures are off about 5 points. We have some breaking news, too, from the business desk this morning. The CEO and chairman of General Electric since 2001 is stepping down from the company. Jeffrey Immelt is announced this morning that he will step down from the company. He is going to retire. He'll remain on as chairman through the end of this year, but the company says John Flannery, the president and CEO of GE Healthcare, will be the new CEO, effective immediately. Again, Jeffrey Immelt stepping down from General Electric. Now, the latest on commodities and agriculture. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. I'm sure that we'll be looking carefully at the weekly crop progress reports this afternoon to see if heat over the weekend or in the forecast for this week will have an effect on the grain market. We ended the market last Friday with the July wheat contract down 3 1/4, but July corn was up 2 1/4, and July soybeans ended Friday's trade up 3 3/4 cents. In livestock trade, we're going to be watching the cattle market because that's gone into an up and down price movement situation. And we'll start trading the June live cattle this morning at $131.25 a hundredweight. August feeder cattle will start at $154.17. And June lean hogs will start the day at $82.47 a hundredweight after gaining 47 cents in the trade last Friday. Well, this is state FFA convention time for several of the state organizations across the Midwest and the nation. Here in Illinois, the Illinois FFA convention gets underway in Springfield, and that will run Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And up in Wisconsin, the state FFA convention getting underway with preliminary activity today, and then basically running Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. State FFA convention's a great time for the FFA members. You all have a great day, and I'm Orion Samuelson.
All right, Orion, you have a good day as well. And on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for this Monday, June 12th, 2017, a business and economic report scheduled for today, this week. For today, the Treasury Department releases a federal budget for May today. The Treasury Secretary, Steven Mnuchin, will testify before House Subcommittee, Appropriations Subcommittee, on the budget later in today. Monthly Treasury Statement of Receipts and Outlays of the United States Government for May also coming out today. This is the one-year anniversary of the Pulse nightclub shooting. It was June 12, 2016, when a gunman opened fire inside the Pulse nightclub in Orlando, killing 49 people. There are a number of different ceremonies and commemorations of the event today. Forbes announces its Celebrity 100 list, the most powerful celebrities from the world's movies, television, music, sports, books, based on their earnings and overall media footprint. Tomorrow, the Labor Department has producer price index for May, and also the Federal Reserve begins a two-day meeting to set interest rates. We're likely to see an interest rate increase coming at their meeting this week. Some of the things that could move the markets today and tomorrow on this Monday, June 12th, 2017.